night.
Well, shaping up to be an interesting day in the news today. We have not only the caravan that is coming and the policy changes that may be accompanying it. Finally, something to wake up the administration and to get serious about building the wall, get serious about doing something about DACA. And not, hopefully, we'll see, but not push it off on a do-nothing Congress. Look, Paul Ryan is never going to pass any kind of immigration reform. We knew that going in. And to say that this whole thing is captive to him, where some activist federal judges, is to essentially evade responsibility. The buck stops on the president's desk. He has the authority, he has the ability, he has the delegated powers to do something about this unilaterally, and he needs to do something about it. But we talk about what is really being done with this, how this is being used by Mexico and others. At least President Trump is saying some of the right things about DACA. We're also going to be taking a look at the EPA CAFE. That's the corporate average fuel economy. This is something that has California and liberals up in arms. Remember, they tried to use, in the Obama administration, they tried to use emissions to shut down the coal industry. They've also tried to use emissions to shut down internal combustion engines, diesel as well as gas. And now we have Scott Pruitt, I think the brightest light in the Trump administration, taking them on again head to head. And saying, no, we're not going to increase the average fuel economy for the automakers to 55 miles per gallon. That's average across the entire corporate fleet. Or massive penalties and taxes that'll be passed on to you as a consumer. Can you afford that? There's only about a third of the markets in this country that people can afford to buy houses anymore. And we just had the auto industry have a bubble burst. Nobody is showing up at the showrooms. This is serious consequences, folks. Look, the automobile industry is a big, big part of our economy. In the 20th century, it was a part of our prosperity as well as our freedom. That's why they want to take it away. That's why all these Marxist urban planners, the people who have taken control of our cities, taking control of our roads. They don't want to build any infrastructure unless it's some kind of a boondoggle rail program. Here in Austin, as a matter of fact, Cargill, who runs Central Texas Gunworks here, and he's been on the show many times. He was actually running for city council, and he pointed out, you're not doing anything to alleviate traffic. He said, you're trying to create this massive boondoggle project of mass transit, which is only there because they can control it. But because you're not even putting it in the right place or orienting it in the right direction. Our big bottleneck here is north and south. And so what do they do? They put it on an east-west. So it's absolutely, totally disconnected from the people's needs because it's about their power. Their power to pay off their political contributors. Their power to control what you own. And whether or not you can move. It's part of Agenda 21. So a very important thing that is now developing right now, because what Scott Pruitt is doing is pushing back against the rules of Obama and the state of California. All of this insanity about these unrealistic numbers is coming from California. We're also going to be talking about the fake news battles. Is this really a battle to fight fake news? Everybody was so upset about Sinclair Broadcasting, because of one video that's put together by one organization, but there's other videos. We put together videos like that showing them all using the same talking points. And guess what? The irony is they're all using the same talking points to come after Sinclair. Absolutely insane. We're going to take a look at the stock market. We have Silicon Valley stocks, I think, have hit a valley here. We'll also be looking in the next segment. We've got a lot of news to cover. Roger Stone is now in the sights of Mueller and has been for a while. All that stuff in terms of coming after Sam Nunberg was to try to come after Roger Stone, try to keep this thing going. That's really fake news, folks. And when they talk about whether you met with Julian Assange, what is happening with Julian Assange? Stay with us. We'll update you.
It's the real news. From the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
We have the Wall Street Journal and a lot of media getting very excited about the fact that Robert Mueller appears to be going after Roger Stone. This is not anything that's new. Roger Stone talked about this when Sam Nunberg went on his media meltdown. Multiple channels, he said, like, all this stuff about getting to him is trying to get emails to get at me, at Roger Stone. And now, Wall Street Journal says, oh, in an email dated August the 4th, 2016, Mr. Stone wrote, I dined with Julian Assange last night. What if that were true? What's the big deal here? However, he wasn't, at that point, think about that. That was 3 months away from the election. It had been about almost a year since he had been Trump's campaign manager. Nevertheless, if they're trying to do some kind of collusion, oh yes, I met with Julian Assange and we got him to tell the truth about Hillary Clinton. This was a month after the DNC leaks, if you remember. And as Roger Stone said, there was no such meeting. It's not what you say, it's what you do. It was a joke. He was sending this to Sam Nunberg. Why was he doing that? Well, because in the month after they had released the stuff at the DNC, everybody was saying, this is a plot. Roger Stone is involved in a conspiracy. Oh, yeah, it was a tinfoil hat conspiracy concocted by Hillary Clinton to distract people from the truth about what she was doing in the DNC. If that is hacking the election, give Julian Assange some kind of an award. I don't care what kind of award you give him. Give him several. Give him the Nobel Peace Prize. Give him the Pulitzer Prize. Make up a new award about freedom and liberty and truth. Hey, do we have an award for people to tell the truth? I don't think so. I don't think we value that much in our society, do we? And so here we have this being concocted, this conspiracy theory that's being tried to stirring the pot. Wall Street Journal, Bob Mueller, and others. Absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. What is going on with Julian Assange? Well, you know, he's been silenced. As RT points out, his internet access has been cut off. Many of his visitors are refused access, rendering him a slow social death. And this to a person who has spent almost 6 years confined to an apartment at the Ecuadorian embassy in London. So a lot of pressure is being put on that small country by Western powers. And the timing is suspicious, but not necessarily. Look, Julian Assange has always told the truth about big government and big business. It just so happens that the two things that are happening right now is that we have a massive lying campaign being conducted by the UK government, Theresa May, supported by Nikki Haley and other neocons, trying to, again, stir the pot about Russia. And he is making some very powerful points about how none of this is true, obviously, if you look at the information. All of this stuff about there even being a nerve gas attack. Doesn't look like that's the case. First, they told us 40 people were involved. Oh, I think maybe as they were driving down, maybe they put it in their car and as they rolled down the window, or maybe even when they got out of the car, all these people in Salisbury got sick. Well, no, that didn't happen. The guy who's head of the local hospital said, just to correct, send a letter out to the media, which only some non-mainstream media outlets chose to report. So we do know that that letter exists. We saw it reported by a couple of places, but not most of the places. You're not going to see it reported by the BBC. He corrected it. He said, no, not 40 people sick. Only 3 people sick. Nobody was poisoned with nerve gas. 2 people are out of the hospital. If there was nerve gas, why did nobody die? And that's not a conspiracy theory, folks. Nobody has died. Even those 3 people. Yes, the spy at the center of all this, Sergei Skripal, is still in critical condition. His daughter, however, has been released. The police lieutenant has been released, or detective, or whatever his rank was. Where did he get exposed? Did he get exposed there at the park bench? Did he get exposed at their home? We don't even know that information. Who did this? There's no suspects in this crime. There's no evidence that's been produced. Nobody has put any forensic evidence out there showing even information about this supposed nerve gas. And if it is what they say it is, We have the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons has said, these stores were destroyed. But in the early 90s, anybody could have had this. So on and on and on. I've talked about this. I'm not going to go into that at length and detail. But that's one aspect that Julian Assange is telling the truth about. The other part of this is what's going on with Spain and Catalonia. Spain getting Germany to arrest the duly elected president of Catalonia. And the fact that the European Union is supporting this kind of anti-democratic elections tyranny on the part of Spain. Do people have a right to rule themselves? Duly elected governments? We've seen the thuggish behavior of the Spanish government coming in with their troops and truncheoning people who were trying to peacefully vote. And still they had votes. They went ahead and voted, and they had an election. They said, that's not good enough. So they had another one. And even with all the control of the media and the polls by the Spanish government, they still voted again for these people. And Spain said, we're going to arrest him. So he fled. Spain got Germany to arrest him. And Julian Assange pointed out the parallels to what happened when Hitler arrested a duly elected Spanish politician because the fascist wanted him arrested, and the Germans turned him over and he was executed. Germany apologized, but as he pointed out, Spain never apologized for that. And Spain got Germany to arrest Charles Pujon, who was the one who was elected at Catalonia. So part of that is some of the pressure. Understand there's a lot of connection between Spain and Ecuador and so forth, but there's a lot of pressure from the UK to push that lie that is being sold to escalate the Cold War. So there's a lot of pressure on him, but he tells the truth. That's why they cut him off. Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are a metaphor for what is going on worldwide with the freedom of speech. And if we don't wake up to this, that's going to be done to every single news outlet. We don't like what you're saying. It's fake news. We're going to talk about this later. Are they really battling fake news everywhere? Or are they simply battling free speech? In India, they had the bureaucracy there say, we're going to decide who is telling the truth or not. And we're going to pull the credentials and the licenses of any journalist that we say are not telling the truth. And the opposition parties and the press went crazy. They said, you're simply trying to control the election. And that's absolutely, obviously what they were trying to do. Isn't that obviously what Facebook and Google and the Democrats and Zuckerberg are all trying to do to everybody? They're trying to control the internet. They're trying to control social media because they don't want you to have freedom of information. I mean, the solution to all of this is not the solution that's being sold by Mark Zuckerberg, saying we're going to set up a Supreme Court for social media that's going to decide whether something is hateful or not. No, 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 no. As a matter of fact, you should start looking at hate speech. The perfect template for hate speech is David Hogg. Because you can intimidate or shut down anybody if you accuse them of being a bully or harassing. Well, that's a tactic of YouTube. Oh, you're bullying or you're harassing. That's what they said to Julian Assange. He was bullying and harassing the UK. You got to shut him down. He was bullying and harassing a government because he was telling the truth about them. And people who tell the truth about David Hogg, or who engage him because he has entered the public arena, and then he pulls back into his snowflake safe space and says, I'm being harassed. Help, help. I'm a child. You shouldn't be bullying children like me. Well, we shouldn't be listening to children for public policy. And so I think what we ought to start saying is that they're using not the hate speech approach to shut down free speech. They're using the hog speech approach. Hog speech. That needs to be what we call the hate speech idea. All right, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about this caravan that is working its way towards the border. What is that going to do in terms of waking people up? This is something that they say they've been doing every year. Nobody has paid any attention. Well, we're paying attention now. We're paying attention now. You have woken us up. Thank you so much. And we'll be right back with the information about the caravan or the invading army, whichever you prefer. That's right, it's a caravan. You're listening to the jazz classic that was part of the soundtrack for Whiplash. That's a great film. I really like that. J.K. Simmons, one of my favorite actors, but the guy really has a lot of breadth in the role. And if you haven't seen that film, it's one of the most original films I've seen. And it hit on a topic that was very close to me when I was in college. I was in a jazz bands like the one depicted. Certainly not that competitive. But I'm glad I wasn't in one that was that crazy competitive. But we worked pretty hard, and it was pretty competitive, and it was a lot of pressure. But that's a great film. I highly recommend Whiplash. It's been around for several years, but great, great film. Very original. But right now we have a backlash about a different caravan. This is the caravan that BuzzFeed embedded a reporter in, and they started bragging about it. Now, you see, as I mentioned yesterday, you got all the mainstream media, Washington Post and others saying, well, it was Fox News that got President Trump all fired up. It was BuzzFeed. And then it was a day before Fox News started talking about it. There was another source that picked that up and started going with it. But we have a story at InfoWars.com, made the Drudge Report. Jamie White points out that caravan people have now released a list of demands for President Trump to comply with. A caravan of at least 1,500 people now, funneling through Mexico. They're building in momentum here, right? People are joining it. It's like a crusade. Funneling through Mexico towards the U.S. border, have released a list of demands that President Trump is expected to comply with, including unfettered access to the United States. That's right. We demand you let us into your country. And, you know, I spent some time yesterday talking about that black history teacher who was lecturing these students, not really so much about black history, but just how bad white people are. That was her version of black history. You're evil. Look in the mirror. You're evil, you Europeans. You stole this land. And as I pointed out, every group of people on every continent, including the Native Americans, are broken into all these different tribes. They were competing and fighting against each other. They had a different nation, a different tongue, a different tribe, had different cultures, different languages. Some of them were very warlike. Some of them were very peaceful. Some of them had highly organized societies. Others were very primitive, and they were fighting against each other, and they fought against the white people who came in. They didn't put out a sign that said, give me your tired, huddled masses yearning to be free. No, they didn't do that. Some of them were peaceful. Some of them were cooperative. Some of them realized after a while that the American government doesn't think this has been a long term. This is a problem with government in general, folks, not just the American government. It's like we're talking about war and slavery. It's part of the human condition. It's part of human nature. This is why we have things like the Second Amendment as a check against that kind of human nature. The people who founded this country were not babes in the woods or babes from some high school, still wet behind the ears, having no experience of their own and not learning from other people's experience. No, they knew exactly what was happening. They knew human nature. And they knew that you had to have a check on that evil human nature. Every society, every people, doesn't matter what their skin color is. It doesn't matter whether they came from Europe or from Africa or whether they were Native Americans here. Everybody was fighting against each other. Conquest, slavery, war, different nations. And yeah, they didn't put out the welcome mat. And there were recriminations on both sides. And people taken into slavery on both sides. But we're supposed to forget all that. And we're supposed to just allow people unfettered access to the United States. Ain't going to happen. Ain't going to happen. We're going to fight on this one way or the other. We just had an election where we elected President Trump to do something about this. We didn't expect President Trump to go there and tell the Republican leadership to do something. We knew they weren't going to do anything. We'd already voted for them several elections, and we knew they weren't going to do anything about Obamacare. They weren't going to do anything about the border. They weren't going to do anything about this climate change takeover of our economy, of our sovereignty. We knew they weren't going to do anything about it. That's why we sent President Trump there. It's not good enough now for President Trump to say, well, you guys need to do something about it. We told them several elections to do something about it, and they wouldn't do it. And now the buck stops on the president's desk. He has the authority, the power, and the duty as commander-in-chief to defend this country's borders against invasion. Some people call this caravan an army. You know, you don't have to have an army that is armed with weapons or bombs. They can be armed with babies, DACA recipients, to take over a country's culture. To take over our law, to subvert that, to change our country into something that the Democrats want to see. The people who are coming from Central and South America are people who are reliant upon government to provide for them. That is the tradition of those countries, of those cultures. Sadly, we don't want to see that here. And so we should have a right to determine which people are going to be coming in and have a limit on the number. If you can't control the number of people coming in and you have no say-so over people coming in, even violent drug cartels, as I've said many times, just look at what's happening in Maryland, at Long Island. We have people who tried to escape MS-13 in El Salvador. And guess what? Because we don't have any borders, those people who are peaceful people coming here, who could have come in as welcome legal immigrants, they are followed by the drug cartels and by MS-13, who then kill their children. As one of the fathers said as he was crying, he said, well, we came here to escape this. And MS-13 came anyway, and they killed my child. Over silly things like boyfriend-girlfriend rivalries, brutally beating people to death, mutilating them, torturing them. That's their society. And we don't want that here. And we have to have a way to control that or to vet that, and also to look at the individuals and say, if we don't know who you are, you're not getting in here if you can't make a case for what your history is. And we're going to control the numbers of people who come in. But they're saying, no, you're not. They're demanding unfettered access to the United States. Political outreach group, this one, Pueblo Sin Fronteras, they organized a caravan. They released a press statement for the United States, Mexico, and their respective Central American governments, saying, we demand of the Mexico and United States that they respect our rights. They put that in there, the Mexico. that they respect our rights as refugees and our right to dignified work to be able to support our families. We don't make demands on me. I don't care what your demands are. You know, Germans had demands that they made on a lot of people. That's why we had World War II and World War I. We don't listen to demands from foreign citizens. You make those demands of your own government. Fix your own place. Don't come here and trash our country with your demands. That's precisely the types of people that we do not want here. Precisely the types of people that did not come to America through Ellis Island, as I pointed out yesterday. The people who came through Ellis Island were not making demands about welfare. We didn't have a welfare state. They came here without a safety net. They came here because they only wanted freedom, not free stuff. Now they're making demands on us. We demand that you respect our rights as refugees, the right to dignified work, be able to support our families, so forth. And we demand that you open the border to us because we are as much citizens as the people of the countries where we are and or travel. No, you aren't. You are not American citizens. You're not. You don't get to vote in our elections. You don't get to take over our countries. And if President Trump won't do something about this, we'll do something to get a different president. I've had enough of this. I'm sick and tired of people demand they be citizens of this country.
Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. It's David Knight.
Yeah, we're talking about this caravan that's coming here. These organizers saying people without borders. It's part of their demands. Saying we demand that you open the borders to us because we are as much citizens of the countries where we are and or travel as the people who are citizens. Oh, wait. Oh, are they saying that? I don't know. Yeah. See, the DACA people, they're not dreamers. There was never a Dream Act that was ever passed. It was proposed many times by the Democrats, but it never passed. There is no such thing as a dreamer. It's a fiction created by the open border people. So there are no dreamers. DACA is not a law. We don't need a new law from Congress. We need the president and his administration to enforce the law. It was President Obama and his Director of Homeland Security writing a memo saying we're not going to enforce the current laws. We're not going to enforce the current borders. What is so difficult about this? Why does this need judicial review? Why is Jeff Sessions engaging even with these federal activist judges who say you can't enforce the law and the borders as they were enforced by Obama in the first half of his administration? Nothing changed except this passivity, this political correctness, this worshiping of people who are foreign citizens criminally trespassing and getting free services. That's right. They not only demand that they be treated as citizens, they demand, and they're getting from the people in New York and California, they're getting superior welfare benefits to the citizens who are already here. California going bankrupt, and yet they're saying, we're going to give in-state tuition rates to people who are illegal aliens. Foreign citizens criminally trespassing will get a break on tuition. If my students, I homeschooled them. If my children wanted to go to college in California, God forbid, I well, first of all, I would physically constrain them. But if they wanted to go to California, they would have to pay out-of-state tuition, but not an illegal alien coming from another country, not in California. That is absolutely insane that they would get superior rights to American citizens. Now, I don't have a problem with people coming into this country. I think we really ought to go. All these people like to say, let's talk about Ellis Island. Let's go back to Ellis Island. As I said before, they didn't come here for free stuff. They came here for freedom. So if you want to come to America and you want to be like the people who helped to make this country great, people who risked everything because they wanted to get away from the oppression in Europe and in Africa and in Central America, they wanted to live free, and there was no social safety net, that's fine. You come here, and we'll let you stay, be a legal citizen. I'm all for that, as long as you don't ever take a dime of public support. Or your children. You come here, you pay your way, and that's fine. You want to come here and work? You want to be free? That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. You just sign off and say you're not going to vote, and you're not going to be a part of the welfare system, because we know where this is going. Right? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. As I've said many times, when I took the Nolan chart, which was something that was created by one of the founders of the Libertarian Party, it was used by Operation Politically Homeless. They go around to college campuses and they say, we want to get you to stop thinking of the political spectrum as being a two-dimensional, as a single line, one-dimensional line. Think of it as a two-dimensional space. And so they would create a chart that on one axis would be personal freedom, and on the other axis would be economic freedom. And then they would rotate that chart 45 degrees so it looked like a diamond. And they would ask you 10 questions about each of those categories, personal freedom or economic freedom. And then they would chart you. And what you would find is that dictators like, there it is right there, you can see it. Dictators like Stalin and Hitler, well, they didn't want to give you any kind of freedom, right? So they both wound up down there in the authoritarian quadrant at the bottom, where they belong. Because when you look at dictators like Stalin, Hitler, Mao, they're really more alike than they are different. But our left-right single-line spectrum would say, well, one of them is, you know, Hitler is way over here on the right, and Stalin and Mao are way over on the left. No, they're not polar opposites of each other. They're very much like each other. So it's a truer portrayal of things. And they rotated it 45 degrees on that chart so people could get their left and right orientation. They'd have people in the center, they'd have conservatives and liberals, and then have libertarians on the top. Why would they be on the top? Well, because we created the chart. We want to be on the top, right? No, it's about people who support freedom in every area. And I didn't get a perfect score on it because I didn't support open borders. And the reason I didn't support open borders isn't because I hate other people who aren't like me, but because I said we can't have open borders with the welfare state that we have today. It will destroy this country. Now, I didn't know anything about Cloward and Piven. Cloward and Piven were a couple of sociologists. We've talked about them repetitively. The Cloward and Piven story. Well, they were socialist sociologists who said, we need to destroy the American system so we can build our utopian socialist society on top of that. How are we going to do that? Well, we open up the borders and we use the welfare state to collapse a society. Yeah. And so I discovered that independently. It's just common sense. Just think about it. You don't need to read Cloward and Piven. The only interesting thing about Cloward and Piven is to understand that this isn't just bad policy. This is by design. They want to destroy America. This is the tactic that they have chosen. So as they point out, these caravan organizers, who call themselves People Without Borders, I'd say People Without Rules, appear to have concluded that it's safer for these people to travel together. The trip is deadly, as pointed out in this article from American Security Today. They say they take these routes, they go directly north to Texas, northwest to Arizona, or along the coast to California. And I have sources inside the Texas National Guard telling me there's a lot of troops in the Texas National Guard that are being deployed to the border, perhaps for this very reason. I don't know the direction these people are going, whether they're going to be coming to try to come to Texas, but I don't think they're going to be welcome. I don't think Governor Abbott is going to allow these people to come across the border. And he'll put the Texas National Guard down there, I believe. I think you're going to hear that announced the next day or so. But the Texas National Guard there to stop this. Say, hey, you want to go to California? They're going to have the welcome wagon people there with all the coupons and all the free benefits, tell you how you can come in and overload their already bankrupt social welfare system. They're just going to be so happy to see you in California. So you go over there. How about that? When we look at this, they're also talking in this article about how, yeah, they ride on trains. Maybe we talked about this, the train of death. They don't even pay for their train rides on their way to the welfare state in America, where they get another free ride for life. They hop on these trains. That's a very dangerous thing. They don't buy a ticket. They hop on the train, and they are sitting on the top of the train, hanging onto the sides. A lot of people fall off, get seriously injured, crippled, maimed, killed on that. They call it the train of death. The response of Mexico has been simply to have the trains go faster through the stations to try to keep that from happening. But what has their response been to the migrants coming in? Well, as Reuters has pointed out, they have been welcoming. They are heroes. They're coming to take down America. Let's help them to go take down America. We had Mexican towns, as Reuters points out, playing host to the caravan. The welcome mat has been rolled out. Local officials have offered lodging in town squares and empty warehouses. They've arranged transport for the migrants. They've conscripted buses, cars, ambulances, police trucks. Hey, let's get you going. And they say this may not be entirely altruistic. They said they've been helping us in part to speed the massive group of people out of their jurisdictions. Yeah, not in my backyard. Go to America. Go to America. Of course, it will end at the U.S. border, where some of them will apply for asylum and some of them will sneak in. And the program director of these People Without Borders or Rules says, we accompany at least those who want to request asylum. We help prepare them for the detention process and the asylum process before they cross the border, because it's so difficult for people to have success if they don't have the information. Yeah, we'll give them the answers to the test so they can game the system. And let me tell you, remember, what was it, in the fall last year, President Trump said, we're going to end DACA. The Mexican consulates across this country here in Austin put out signs, come here, we'll help you to evade the gringo laws. That's what they're doing in Mexico. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We want to welcome the people in Needles, California, who are listening to us on the radio, KTOX, on both AM and FM. We have 1340 AM and 104.1 FM. And I just want to remind people that what funds this program are the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. And we have several of them I'll tell you about right now that are on deep discount, 50% off or more. We have CellForce, 50% off. We have Myco ZX Plus, 50% off. We have Alexa Pure Breeze, our radical way to clean the air in your house, a very effective air filter. Get clean air in your house. Just yesterday, I talked about the article out of the Daily Mail, a couple of stories showing the dust in your house and just looking at the dust on your plates and the plastic that was picked up that was coming off of the materials, the fabrics, the carpets, the drapes in your house, and how that was being deposited on your plate. Well, you know, I don't like microscopic dust on my plate anyway, or odors, or things that are toxic that don't necessarily accumulate on your plate. So you can do things to keep the air in your house clean. This is one of the best things you can do. I love this. We have it at our house. Alexa Pure Breeze, $50 off right now. And finally, we have Brain Force Plus and the Real Red Pill. And we have that as part of a combo pack. You can get those two together 50% off. That is my absolute favorite supplement that we have here at InfoWarsStore.com, BrainForce Plus. So we really do appreciate your support. That's what keeps us free, independent, and on the air. All right, let's talk some more about this caravan and the effects that it's having on us. Mexican government is trying to put some distance back between themselves and this caravan, as President Trump is criticizing them and linking it, as he should, to NAFTA. And just understand that when we look at these border issues, it is not a separate issue from NAFTA. The first thing that they do when they want to combine all these different governments into a world government, what do? They do it gradually. It's a gradual process. They create regional governments. That's why they wanted to create a North American Union. They kept saying, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. There's no design for having a North American Union. Yes, there was. Yes, there was. Just like they wanted to have a European Union. They always began by having a trading bloc. You know, the European Union began with a European trading bloc. And then they took down the borders, they added a common currency, and then when their fiat currency started getting bad, they said, oh, you know, we need more political unification, more political control. And then the next step in all this, of course, was the Trans-Pacific and the Transatlantic Partnerships, where they would then create these regional governments that, and then put an organization above the European government, above the American government, above the Asian trading blocs, and then start controlling different countries, different industries, and doing it, again, in the name of trade, just like they did in the European Union, just as they did in America. So they got us to the very first step, but many people have talked about how they wanted a North American Union. We even had Goldman Sachs bankers come in with the Council on Foreign Relations, I think it was. It's one of these organizations. Which one was it? It was the one that created a big issue with Ted Cruz's wife, because she was there as a representative for Goldman Sachs. And they were talking about how they would have a common border for the North American Union. They were going to have the border patrolled by Homeland Security. Maybe you need to get somebody else to do it, because they don't seem to be too interested in patrolling the border that we have right now. And the reason they aren't, though, folks, is not because they're inept. It's because they're part of the scheme. They say, we'll have a border around the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, and that will be controlled by the U.S., because we'll be the policemen of the world, at least the policemen of the North American Union, because we are the policemen of the world, so we can certainly take up that additional responsibility, because we won't patrol our own border. No, they want a North American Union. They start out by having a free trade zone. Then the free trade zone becomes a political union. Then those regional political unions are joined together into a world government. These are the baby steps that they take. We saw this with Zbigniew Brzezinski talking about the trilateral commission. In other words, we're going to break the world into three different regional zones, and then we will unify those three zones. That was what we saw with the TPP and with the transatlantic partnership. So this is a plan of consolidation. This is why the UN, all these people say, oh, we're citizens of the world. Yeah, that's where this is all coming from. It's where it's going to. So they had three Mexican towns as they crossed the border from Mexico and Guatemala. As they crossed that, they tweeted out and praised the Mexican authorities for stepping aside, as they always do. Except when it's here. Then when President Trump says, even talks about ending DACA, the Mexican government comes out to all their consulates in every state, and they don't step aside. They step into it to try to help their citizens to evade our laws. And I understand they're playing all of these games. So we're not telling anybody to do anything illegal. Yeah, it's kind of like the difference between tax evasion and tax avoidance. Semantics, right? Tax evasion, they will tell you, that's just avoid. That's not paying any taxes or whatever. If you do avoidance, well, that's just looking at the rules and saying, how can I not pay any taxes? So Mexico comes in and they do deportation avoidance. And they study this very carefully, and then they hold little seminars for all their citizens and tell them how to avoid getting deported and offer them all kinds of support. But then they say, well, we don't support or promote any such activity under any circumstances. We don't promote illegal migration. Yeah, they do. They do, because it is a big part, just as we have China and the China price, and a big part of that is not only currency manipulation, but violating copyright laws. The Mexican government needs the money that is sent back to them by people who come into this country. They depend on that, and they do not want to have to pay for the education of their children either. They depend on us educating them. And I wouldn't even really mind that so much if we weren't educating them to become progressive Marxists. That's what our system cranks out. I don't even want to support our education system, our government education system, for American children. But we have become a seminary for Marxism in our government schools and the UN agendas that are fall underneath that. President Trump tweeted out on Sunday, Mexico has the absolute power not to let these large caravans of people enter their country. They do, but they step aside. I want to play for you a clip from Michael Caputo, who talked about Trump and DACA. He was a former Trump advisor. Here's Michael Caputo and what he had to say about Trump and DACA.
I think that he wants the a solution that, as he said, is one of love. I believe he wants those DACA recipients of DACA classified people to stay in the country. And I believe he would do that if the Democrats would come around. I mean,
well, how about showing some love to Americans? How about putting Americans first instead of DACA?
Campaign rhetoric, something that he was saying as he was barnstorming America. Where the president is now is he believed that this program would be overturned in the courts. So he canceled it and said, let's get together and fix this thing for good. And yet we haven't been able to do it.
Well, he came up with the phrase bill of love. I'm trying to figure out that's his own word. That's his own rhetorical position on this. Why the evolution away from that public offer?
Because the Democrats, in his mind, and I think in mine as well, have been playing politics with DACA all the way along. They're not giving the president conceding to the points that the president wants. He controls the White House and the administration. The Republicans control the Senate and the House. The Democrats are acting as if this is their time. It's not. They have to compromise to get a solution for DACA.
Well, yeah, Democrats are not the only ones who are playing politics with this, folks. How about a little bit of integrity? How about a little bit of transparency? How about just doing what you said you're going to do? Put Americans first. How about that? You have the power. As I've pointed out many times, you have the power, President Trump, to do this. Stop playing games. I know that you say this is 3D chess. You don't say it. Other people say that because they don't want to believe that they're being lied to by you. I don't know if he's telling the truth, quite frankly, if he says one thing to Republicans when he's running and then he says something different to Democrats when he's president, which group is he lying to? I don't know. I would like to just have somebody that just does it or shuts up about it. Just do it. Don't up the ante from 0.8 million to 1.8 million people. Talk about a bill of love and do nothing. This is not a law that has to be changed. No laws changed. No borders changed. We still have a border in spite of what Nancy Pelosi said. She said, we just have a line that's running through a couple of the one community. No, we don't. We have a border between two different nations, and we're not going to have a nation if we don't respect that border. I don't know. I am not into this 3D chess BS. It's total BS. This is one knight that is not going to be used as your pawn. Do what you said. Just do it. You have the capability to do it. That is absolutely insane. It is a defense issue if we ever had a defense issue. Why can we allocate money for the defense of foreign countries' borders and not a penny out of the Defense Department to defend our own borders? That is an absurdity, and it is a lie. It is a lie. These judges don't have the authority to tell the president that he can't defend the borders.
In Texas, it's David Knight.
Keep on dying. Welcome back. We had President Trump tweet out, as ridiculous as it sounds, and it doesn't just sound ridiculous, it is ridiculous. The laws of our country do not easily allow us to send those crossing our southern border back where they came from. He tweeted this out on earlier this morning, or let's see. Yesterday evening, about 5 p.m. He said a whole big wasted procedure must take place. Mexico and Canada have tough immigration laws, whereas ours are an Obama joke. Act, Congress. No, President, you act. First of all, look at the crossing part. This is where you stop it. You stop it at the crossing point. You talked about a wall because you knew that's the issue. Once somebody gets in, then they start playing games with our laws. So you stop them from getting in. We got Governor Abbott reportedly sending the Texas National Guard to the border. You send the U.S. Army there. Then send the Army Corps of Engineers or the Seabees or whoever you need to set up a temporary barrier there to keep this from happening. Stop the crossing part. That's how you stop it. Get some crossing guards down there. Take a look at the situation that happened in Israel. Regardless of what you think about that, they have a fence and they have soldiers, and they said, you're not crossing that border. You do that. You do that at the border. This is a war. This is an invasion. You don't have to shoot people. Just set up some barriers there. Put troops up. Just say, no, can't come in. Can't come in. Sorry. Not going to let you in. You don't have to get violent with people. But you do have to show force. You do have to have a physical physical barrier to keep people from coming across. You can do that. You are the commander in chief. The buck stops on your desk. Do something. We didn't elect you so that you would tell Congress to do something. We told Congress to do something. They don't listen to anybody except their donors, the Koch brothers, who want cheap labor. That's the only people that they listen to. They're not going to do anything to protect the border. As Ann Coulter said, I don't know what more horrible thing you could come up with than violating your central campaign promise that became the chant and the theme of the campaign that he promised at every single rally. Does it sound familiar? Like, read my lips? Remember George Bush? He'd campaigned against President Reagan. He said, I don't believe in supply-side economics. I don't believe that tax cuts are good for the economy. And he got beaten by Reagan. He called it voodoo economics. So after two Reagan terms, when Vice President George H.W. Bush wanted to run for president, everybody was really concerned because he was going to govern like a Democrat. He was going to raise taxes. And he did. He gave us the biggest tax increase we had ever had up to that point. And when people questioned him on it, he was out jogging one day. I'll never forget it. Never forget it. It's when I severed all my ties with the Republican Party. He was out in his jogging suit, and some reporter said to him, what about the read my lips promise? And he smirked at the reporter, said, read my hips. And George H.W. Bush jogged off. And so did I. So did I. You can forget about it. You want to do a read my lips type of promise, President Trump? President Trump went on to say our country is being stolen by illegals. He said, act now, Congress, our country is being stolen. He needs to do something. Here's what President Trump had to say. Let's play video clip number 8.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Talk about the war between the Trump administration and California as the newest front. And this is with the EPA pulling back the corporate average fuel economy that has been mandated. And you may not realize this, but they are going to radically increase the mandated fuel economy so that it's going to be virtually unaffordable. Already people are having difficulty paying for the cars because of all the safety regulations and the environmental regulations that are going on. So this is a fight that needs to be had, not just even over our access to transportation, our ability to move about freely, our ability to own things, but it is also about their attempt to shut down our economy in the name of this climate alarmism. That was what the Paris Climate Treaty was about. You want to tell me that this is a worldwide treaty to save the planet when they give the biggest polluters, China and India, who have the most factories, they're building these factories at an incredible rate, and they are the dirtiest factories on earth, but they get a pass. But this is about global warming? Oh, okay. I think I see a problem here already in the narrative, don't you? No, it's about controlling and throttling certain countries and rewarding others. It's about a redistribution of everybody from having everybody having some first world and second world countries and some third world countries to making everybody a third world country where you own nothing. You own nothing. But let's talk about a little bit about some other news. We have an amazing illustration of the hypocrisy of Mark Zuckerberg. This was reported by the Daily Mail. A photographer who was escorted to Facebook headquarters and berated because he supposedly breached the privacy of Mark Zuckerberg. Do you see the irony here? The guy who has become one of the world's richest men by breaching the privacy of everybody on Earth. Not as much as Google, though. Google is even worse than Facebook. Just remember that. But they had a photographer who has accused Mark Zuckerberg of, quote, extraordinary hypocrisy, unquote, after he was escorted to Facebook headquarters by security guards and accused of breaching the privacy of Zuckerberg, taking pictures of him cleaning up his dog's poo on a public street. Yeah, well, that's not the only poo that Zuckerberg is shoveling, is it? He's shoveling a lot of that stuff everywhere. He's shoveling that to his dumb effers on F-Book. And he is shoveling it in Congress, and we're going to talk about that coming up in the program. He was stunned, he said, when he was approached by a security guard in a golf buggy as he sat in his car on a public road and was forced to drive to Facebook headquarters in Palo Alto, California, where he was reprimanded. Wow. Meanwhile, we have Facebook has shut down an ad. They rejected this ad. It's from a Franciscan university. It shows Jesus on the cross. Now, pull up a picture of that, the Jesus that they have on a cross. This is a very decorative cross, and Jesus doesn't look like he's in any pain. You know, we've seen these types of crosses. They become something of relics, and they're really kind of pretty. And I thought it was kind of interesting because they said the ad that we put up there was rejected. They said it was shocking, sensational, and excessively violent. And I thought, you know, these pagan atheists at Facebook, they see this better than Christians do. Christians have become anesthetized to this, haven't we? You're going to think about how shocking, sensational, and excessively violent the cross really was. We don't often think about that. Even at Easter time, we don't really think about how excessively violent it was. How shocking. How sensational. So this Catholic University in Steubenville, Ohio, put it out, and they said, yeah, they rejected that. They said it was excessively violent, and we agree with them. the picture doesn't look violent, and again, Jesus doesn't look like he's in any pain whatsoever, and it's a very decorative, pretty cross. The cross is not pretty. It's a very violent means of execution, one of the most violent means of execution ever devised, preceded by tremendous whippings and scourgings that would be enough to kill anybody anyway. It was something that was done to torture people. You know, Santa Anna did that. It's not just the Romans. Santa Anna did that. It's one of the reasons why people revolted against him. You know, it wasn't just Texas that revolted against Santa Anna. It was virtually every Mexican province revolted. The only ones who won were the Texans. Most of them, after he got an army and showed that he was going to fight, most of them said, all right, never mind. We didn't mean it. Sorry. Didn't mean it. There were three or four that did. Texas was the only one that didn't do that. But yeah, he had a very, it wasn't just executing everybody at the Alamo and at Goliad. No, he would do it in a way that would, he kind of grew up. Maybe it wasn't Santa Ana. I think it was, he was a soldier. When he was a young soldier, he saw that done. I can't remember whether he did it or he saw it done. But anyway, that was the way the Mexican government would deal, the Spanish government at the time would deal with dissenters, I guess. But another article here. We've got DNA testing for IQ is coming. This is on the Drudge Report. So it might not be smart to take one. Well, you know what? It might not be smart for us to determine a human being's worth by their IQ. Because first of all, how do we even measure IQ? I talked about this with my family last night. You know, this is something that we've seen a lot of talk about Down syndrome lately. And I find it interesting that on the heels of that, they say, we're going to start doing DNA tests for IQ. And maybe we can abort these kids who don't have the IQ that we want because they don't have any value. And we take some of the lowest IQ individuals those with Down syndrome. And if you've been paying attention, you can see that they have a lot of value. A lot of value as human beings. People who would never be cruel or execute an animal. Don't think twice about doing that to humans with low IQ. I mean, this is eugenics, folks. And now they've gone in and they said, well, we have determined genes that are linked to intelligence. And I say, really? I don't think you even really have a good definition for what intelligence is. There's a lot of different types of intelligence. You know, just because somebody is a good communicator or a good writer, it doesn't mean that people who can't communicate aren't intelligent. There's so many different types of intelligence, and the IQ tests only measure one of those types of intelligence. You can have somebody who may not be able to spell, they may not be able to write or speak very well, but boy, they might be a genius with mechanical stuff. I've known a lot of these people. If you've lived long enough, you've met people like that as well. They don't communicate very well, but boy, they can fix anything. On the other hand, you've got a lot of people who are kind of idiot savants in terms of their PhDs or their degrees. They know how to sail through school and do all the book subjects and take all the tests and excel at those tests, but maybe they can't really fix anything. Do we really want to take this IQ test and say, we're going to have an army of political pundits who don't know how to even turn something on, perhaps? I mean, that is a very bad idea. You don't even know how to measure IQ accurately. And even if you did, and even if you could connect it to particular genes, it is not the people who are the smartest that have the greatest worth. That's another thing I've learned in my life. I can tell you that the most special people I have known have not been the smartest or the richest. They have been people who are authentic. And unfortunately, you don't see that too much with the people who are smart and who are wealthy. They can be very dangerous, those people, but they aren't necessarily the types of people I like to hang out with. This is a very dangerous, the new genetics of intelligence. I would say the new eugenics of intelligence. That was the paper that came out talking about a DNA IQ test. Yeah, that's the new eugenics of intelligence. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more news. I'm David Knight. That's right. Maybe I'm not high IQ. Maybe I'm just crazy. Yeah, I don't think I have a high IQ, but do you? Would you like to know if you had a high IQ? I mean, we're looking at this thing. I talked about it in terms of eugenics because we already have tests for kids and say, well, we think they've got Down syndrome. Sometimes they don't. And I've told you the story of our close friend who had twins. One of them had Downs, the other didn't. And they wanted her to abort both of them. She didn't abort either of them, and it was a real blessing in their life and in the lives of many other people. But when we look at this, we have them, you know, this is just a $50 test that you can take right now. They're trying to create their database to say, these are going to be the factors that we're going to look at in the DNA. And then we can do this to babies, and then we can determine that we're going to abort the ones that we don't want. That's the eugenics side of this. And you can do this just for $50. You can get a DNA test. You know, this came up a couple of weeks ago when you had a newspaper in Massachusetts suggest to Senator Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, you can settle all this stuff about whether or not you're a Cherokee. Just pay $50 and send them your spit, and they can tell you whether you're a Cherokee or not. Well, they can also tell you what your IQ is. Maybe that's why Elizabeth Warren doesn't want to do it. Maybe it's not just the Cherokee connection. Maybe she doesn't want people to know what her IQ is. Well, 23andMe, one of the biggest companies, connected also to Google, I think is one of the Google founders' wife that has started that. They said they don't tell people what their IQ is. They're concerned the information will be poorly received. And I'm sure that is the case. You know, think about it. If you had a high IQ, you might say, yeah, I'm so smart. Yeah, I don't really need to do anything. I kick back or whatever. It could have an adverse effect on your life. Just, you know, the pride. You know, pride can destroy somebody, right? So you don't want to get proud about your IQ. If it's low, you don't want to feel like there's nothing you can do. Or if it's average, you don't want to think that you can never aspire to something greater, right? So, yeah, maybe we shouldn't know that. Maybe they shouldn't be collecting that information on the rest of us. Remember the movie Gattaca with Jude Law? Remember how they would limit people according to their a metric that they would have? They would say, well, you know, you have a particular IQ. We're not even going to let you try to do certain things. That's the thing that is really scary. That's what I was talking about earlier when we say, how do we even know we don't even know how to accurately measure IQ. Right now, they look for people who have good math or verbal ability or things like that. Oh, they're really smart. No, there's a lot of different ways that you can be very smart. A lot of different ways. A lot of different types of intelligence. But just going back to that movie, and apart from the eugenics aspect of this, just think about how horrible that would be. And if you don't understand it, take a look at that movie. Think about how horrible it would be to be pigeonholed into one spot because of some artificial metric that has been superimposed on the population, limiting you to what you can do. See, that's what we always come back to liberty, don't we? It always comes back to liberty. How interesting. It comes back to liberty. You know, whether we're talking about guns and the Second Amendment. Oh, I'm sorry. That's an issue of liberty. It's not about guns. It's not about the Second Amendment. It's about liberty to defend yourself. There's some clips of the movie Gattaca. Excellent, excellent movie, by the way. But it always comes back to liberty. If we're talking about free speech, it's not about the First Amendment. It's not about speech, really. It's about liberty to say what you want to say. And if it offends somebody, they can shout back at you. And they can challenge you in the free marketplace of ideas. But it always comes back to liberty. The liberty to not have some kind of artificial metric like an IQ measurement superimposed on us to limit us as to what we could do. This is why I oppose the efforts that are being made to shut down our transportation. And I'm going to talk about that coming up in the broadcast with what the EPA is doing. It's an important move against that tactic. That has been something that's been a long time coming from the UN to try to control our movement. Again, it's coming after our liberty. If we don't have liberty as the goal, then no matter what we're looking for, whether it's speech or whether it's self-defense or whether it's prosperity or whether it's safety or whether it's even having a great country, you know, if you make making America, you know, if you make the symbols of America, the trappings of America, yeah, I understand. Well, let's honor those symbols. And what this country stands for. But if that becomes the only thing, if that becomes the primary thing, then we've lost it. See, America is great because it focused on liberty. And if you focus on liberty, these other things have an opportunity to be. There's no guarantee that you're going to be prosperous. There's no guarantee you're going to be safe. But if you give up your liberty, there's a guarantee that you'll be a slave that doesn't have any of those things. All right, while we're talking about IQ, we have this newest challenge of the generation that wants to tell us and are begging the government to take away their liberty and ours when it comes to self-defense. That generation, as I call them, the Tide Pod generation, because the Tide Pod challenges that these kids were doing. And of course, we got Chuckie Schumer. He wants to protect them not only from the mythical assault weapon that they still have no definition of. They don't have any. They want to ban it, but they can't define it. But he wants to protect those Tide Pod kids because he said those things look delicious. I was tempted to eat one. Remember that? We talked about that. Well, now they've got something else. And I wonder if Chuck Schumer is tempted to snort a condom. Well, my wife saw this and she had an amazing comment she sent to me. She said, if only their parents had used the condoms properly. So we have these kids. This is the newest thing, trying to choke themselves by snorting a condom. They record themselves snorting the condoms and pulling them through their throats. This is absolutely insane. But it illustrates, as Free Thought Project points out of their headline, it illustrates the dismal effects of being raised on social media. These are kids who are exhibit A for the Ash paradigm. Solomon Ash, remember I've talked about that. The psychologist who said, well, individuals will yield to group pressure, to group beliefs, to group opinion. They will yield to the herd mentality, even when something is obviously wrong, like eating a Tide Pod or snorting a condom up your nose. They will still yield to what the group wants them to do. They want group approval so badly. I mean, Solomon Ash would have been out of a job if he had been around at this point in time. He would not have needed to do his paper, his research. There would have been no need for it. People would have just pointed to Facebook and say, yeah, I know that. Look at this group of kids, and these are the geniuses who are demanding that we give up our First Amendment, give up our Second Amendment, give up our liberty of speech, our liberty of self-defense. And then this on technology. Can cell phones cause cancer? Says Ask CBS. Are you serious? That question has been answered over and over and over again. They say, yeah, look, we've got even more studies now. How many studies do you need? And you know how this is going to go. The technology companies, and Apple has been putting this down their disclaimers, right? Because they know that it does. All these companies know that it does. It generates brain tumors, it generates heart tumors, and it does it far more in males. But we've got 5G on the horizon, and so what they'll do is say, well, that was the last generation that gave you all those cancers. Not 5G. Well, we've already had studies showing that it does it with 5G as well. But don't worry about that. They're going to roll it out anyway. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
World of universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
I was just talking about Gattaca, the film, and how frightening it can be if our society decides that they're going to start valuing life and limiting life, not just limiting whether or not you're going to be allowed to live, selective abortions, but also limiting what you can do in life based on your measured IQ. That is portrayed in the film Gattaca. But let's take a look at genetics and how it echoes another film, Jurassic Park. We now have a story from the BBC, the increasingly realistic prospect of extinct animal zoos. Yes, bringing back animals that have long been extinct and putting them in zoos, just like Jurassic Park. Michael Crichton anticipate all this stuff. You know, he anticipated gene editors like CRISPR and so forth that we now see being used to do it could be useful. I mean, we'd like to see some of these animals come back, right? Not necessarily a T-Rex, but a woolly mammoth or a dodo bird or whatever. We'd like to see some of those animals come back. But his whole point of doing this, and he was very concerned about the ethics of this, kind of summed up in the movie, if you remember, the character saying, it's not whether or not we got so interested in what we could do, we never asked whether we should be doing it, right? So it's not, can you do it, but should you do it? That is really the question with technology. We have two different issues, it seems like to me. As somebody who's always loved technology, I became an engineer because I love technology. I was an early adopter of the Mac, of the iPhone, a lot of different things. I've paid a lot of money to be first in line for those things when they came out. And I used it extensively in my life to free me up from things. And that is the issue. We have to look at the negative effects of technology. And one of the negative effects that is so important is, does it concentrate power or does it distribute power? Is power concentrated in the hands of a few people or is it distributed to other people? Now, in my lifetime, most of the technology that I saw was distributing power to people. I saw things like the automobile that gave people freedom to move about. I saw things like the personal computer that liberated us from the early days when I was in college, having to stand in line at a central processing unit and have to wait for this mega computer, this deep thought, getting punch cards and standing in line, hoping you don't drop your massive tray of punch cards and so forth. That's how old I am. I just missed the slide rules. But I had to stand in line for punch cards. And we had to wait for this one computer that was shared by multiple universities, as well students who were engineers and scientists, as well as the administration, all using this one computer. And so we're all waiting in line for this piece of equipment that was so expensive, millions and millions of dollars. And it would give us a little bit of a slice of its time. And it was a completely upside down paradigm. The computer should be serving me. The computer should be waiting on me. Technology should wait and serve me, not the other way around. But now when I look at the technology that's being put at the forefront, the 21st century, I mean, just look at airplane technology, right? We had massive, massive change in our ability to move about with airplanes. It was absolutely incredible. The way that the cost came down, the speed went up, and so forth. But what has happened in the 21st century? Ever since September 11th, the airplane industry has been characterized by authoritarian control. From the TSA to the dictatorial little stewardesses on the airplane, stewards on the airplane, bullying people everywhere you go. It has now become a grid of control. And it turns people into bullies and little petty tyrants, dragging people off the planes, kicking and screaming, threatening to arrest anybody, putting their hands on you, x-raying you in order for your ability to travel. We haven't seen any technological improvement in airplane travel, but we have seen the worst in government control and human nature come out. And that's what I'm concerned about with technology. Any technology can be subverted and can be controlled. It can be turned into a source of control of the population. And so when we look at this, and we look at what is happening with DNA, ability to measure things or ability to bring things back, we should be looking at the warnings of Michael Crichton as well, not just the warnings of Gattaca. We had scientists at the time. You know, he saw this, and most of the scientists who were working in the field didn't see it. And he laid the problem out. He said the problem is really the fact that these people are motivated by profit. There's really no understanding of where this is going or how rapidly it is changing. The general population doesn't understand the dangers going on here. The government is funding it because they don't want there to be a genetic gap with other governments. And this is the thing that's driving everything, whether it's nuclear weapons or biological weapons or chemical weapons or genetic weapons or autonomous killing robot weapons or artificial intelligence. It's all driven by a fear of what the other people might do to you first, so you do it to them first. And so we have these technologies racing out of our control, concentrating power in the hands of a few individuals. And Michael Crichton was very worried about that. Incidentally, Michael Crichton was also a whistleblower on climate alarmism, this phony global warming stuff. He saw that coming, and he called BS on that long before most people were doing it effectively. No longer with us, but he anticipated a lot of this stuff. So now they're talking about having extinct animal zoos. And who knows, with all this genetic modification, we may become the extinct animals. That's the kind of stuff that is being put out by CDC. Well, there's disease X. We don't know exactly what it's going to be yet, but yeah, it's on our way. We're working on it. We're going to make sure that we got diseases that jump from species to species or something that we're working on the CDC, because we're not really too careful about this. Remember the many times we've talked about this. Just in Louisiana, the primate, the primary primate research facility let a rare disease escape into the soil there. It was just out in the wild. We've had so many cases of where the CDC and these advanced labs, that are supposed to be high-level labs, don't follow the procedures. Another thing that I find interesting here is a story coming out of the UK, reported by The Guardian. Teenage girl shot dead in Tottenham, North London. Wait a minute. I thought that London was a gun-free zone. They don't have guns owned by everybody. We just reported a couple of days ago how London had surpassed New York in terms of its murder rates, mostly with knives. I say, well, maybe we got to ban knives. Because, you know, knives don't kill people. People kill people. And they can use a knife or they can use machetes like they were doing in Duisburg, Germany, 80 people brawling in the street with machetes. Those are instances of what we really need is not knife control or machete control. We need border control in those particular instances. But here in London, We have a girl, 17, died of a gunshot wound. A 16-year-old boy is in critical condition. These are two separate shooting incidents. The girl, a friend of hers, said she was just chilling with her friends. She was shot from a car for no reason at all in a residential area. Car just pulled up, just started shooting, said the 21-year-old, who did not want to be named. Obviously, why? She gets shot, too. And so when we look at this, this is starting to look like the Chicago drive-by shootings, isn't it? But when we talk about this in Chicago, we say, look at all the heavy control they have over guns. And I know I've had people call me from Chicago and say, don't call it a gun-free zone because we can't get guns. I carry. You can possibly go through. And yes, even in New York and other places like that, if you jump through a lot of hoops and you work really hard and you pay a lot of money, you can get their permission to protect yourself. That's not the kind of world we want to live in. But when you look at Chicago, they say, well, this is not our problem. It's not a failure of the gun control laws in Illinois. This is a failure because people buy their guns in Indiana and they bring them in here to Chicago. Is that where they got the guns in London? Did they get them in Indiana and take them into London and shoot these people on the streets just like they do in Chicago? Or is it a failure of society, of other issues, and also a failure of people being able to protect themselves? Yeah, I know I sound like Archie Bunker, but the solution to people getting killed by guns is for good people to have guns to defend themselves. That is a deterrent, not only against lower-level criminals, but also against your criminal government. Stay with us. We'll be right back. That we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what makes this program possible. The products that you buy there, so it also keeps us independent. And we're going to be talking about battling fake news. We're going to be talking about the outbreaks of boycotts left and right and the different ways that free speech is trying to be controlled. This is why we sell products directly to you. Great products, I would say. These are all things that I use every day in my personal life. Take a look at the Alexa Pure Breeze air filter. I have one of those. Right now, it's $50 off at InfoWarsStore.com. We love this in our house. Very effective, very quiet, very important that you have clean air in your house. It's not just the dust that gets everywhere, gets on your plate like we talked about yesterday, the 115 plastic particles with every meal because of a typical house and how the plastic gets mixed in with the dust. Well, it's not just plastic. It's also bacteria and other things that get mixed into the dust. Get rid of that dust. Also, get rid of any toxic gases that are inside of your house as well. A great way to do that is with the Alexa Pure Breeze, and it is $50 off right now. We also have a combo pack of the Real Red Pill and Brain Force Plus. Brain Force Plus is my absolute favorite supplement that we have here. I use the vitamins and the minerals and things like that. I see a difference over a very long period of time how I don't get sick as frequently as I used to. I don't even get as sick as my younger children because I take this more diligently, these supplements and so forth. But when I take Brain Force Plus, I can really immediately tell the difference. It focuses my mind, helps to keep me awake, and that is a big issue on an early morning show. Let me tell you, you can get that right now in a combo pack with the Real Red Pill, 50% off. Also, Cell Force, 50% off. Many other products. Take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. We offer you the finest products, and that is what keeps us independent and free. So while we're talking about that, we have all these calls to shut down Laura Ingraham saying, oh, it's hate speech. Or as I said earlier, we should just start calling it hog speech. You know, just you don't like what somebody says, you attack. You said, I'm being bullied. Help, help, I'm being harassed. Shut him down. Shut him down. And so Fox News has finally, after several days of this going back and forth, has finally come out and said, we cannot and will not allow voices to be censored by agenda-driven intimidation efforts. Good. Good. Because that's exactly what is going on here. I'm glad to hear them finally come out and say that. Even CNN's Brian Stelter has talked about this because, as I pointed out yesterday, this is not just a boycott that has been enacted by David Hogg against Laura Ingraham, wishing her into the cornfield, like some kind of a Twilight Zone nightmare episode. No, this is this is something that has also been practiced now by the right against the left. We had an MSNBC contributor, Eichenwald, who was very hateful towards Kyle Kashub, another student who took the opposite political side of David Hogg. And so people said, this student who is in the political arena, I don't think Kyle was calling for this. Kyle was not saying, shut them down like David Hogg. Kyle takes a much more personal responsibility approach to everything, I think. He wasn't calling for censorship, but people were calling for it on behalf of him. And so they had a sponsor say, we're not going to advertise anymore on MSNBC. So it goes both ways. And that's not the right way to do it. Brian Stelter said, are ad boycotts the right answer here? He said, I'm personally pretty wary of this. I think it's dangerous to see these ad boycott attempts happening more and more often in this country. Well, of course he does, because that's the way they're funded. And that's the whole point. You want to try to take out your competition, not by arguing with them, but by shutting them down, either with government regulation or with Facebook or Google wishing them away in the cornfield, making them disappear, shadow banning them or censoring them. But he went on to say, he said, my view is let's not shut down anyone's right to speak. Absolutely. It's what I said yesterday. He said, let's meet their comments with even more speech. Let's try to respond that way. Amen to what Brian Stelter said. That is absolutely the way to approach this. This is a very, very dangerous form of intolerance and censorship. And it is politically motivated by his network and others. CNN has engaged in this type of witch hunt behavior against InfoWars, begging YouTube to pull our channels, begging them to say, look at this. Don't you think that's bad? As they're going down and harassing an elderly lady who had a Facebook post, and they said, you're retweeting stuff that we have traced back to a Russian troll farm. So you're a Russian propagandist. I don't know what you're talking about. I never heard of this. I agree with what was in there. I put that stuff out there. They were harassing her. At the same time, they were telling YouTube, you need to shut down InfoWars because they're harassing people. Well, the latest way that this has manifested itself in the last couple of days, because we have such short attention spans in the news cycle, is this video of Sinclair, the Sinclair Network. And this was put together by a sports news site, Deadspin. And they said they put out a statement, and this is a corporation that owns a lot of local news areas, and they told their anchors to read this statement. So what these guys did was they put this together and said, this is horrible. Here's a clip of that video that was put together by Deadspin.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
So those of you listening on radio, they are showing
the quality,
all these different people in different cities produces. Reading from the same script.
But
exactly.
We are concerned about trouble and irresponsible one-sided news stories.
Okay, all right, that's enough of that. I don't even know the people on the radio are getting that. But what they're doing is, they've got a same script that's being played by all these people. So these people edited it together. So they're all speaking one after the other in the clip, or they're all saying the same thing at the same time. And if you actually look at what they're saying, it's pretty innocuous. I don't even know why they bothered to have them read it. It's just saying, we're going to do our best to provide you with accurate news, and we're not part of fake news and so forth and so on. We have done this type of thing multiple times. We have shown you many, many times how all these different networks will say the same talking points. This is nothing new. This is one of the reasons why we don't do teleprompter news here at InfoWars. We don't have anybody writing a script for us. When you write scripts for people, then it comes across, rightfully so, as inauthentic. The opinions you hear here are those of me and me alone, okay? So nobody's writing a script here for anybody here at InfoWars. We tell you what we have to think. They say one company, one script, many, many voices. So what? That's the way it's typically been done. But you got these people out there as if they're just now discovering this. Jane Hall, a professor at American University and a former media critic for Fox News, said the promo is clearly supporting Trump's condemnation of most news outlets. She said it's naked in the sense that it's forcing people in the news to read something that is a corporate piece of propaganda, in my opinion. Look, when you put stuff, when you have people write up the news for individuals, even choosing the stories that they're going to report. I choose the stories I'm going to report. I choose what angle I'm going to say about it. I give you the information. I give you my interpretation. You can agree with it or disagree with it. You disagree with it? Say so. You can put it in the comments below and so forth. You can send me a message on Twitter. Or you can start your own channel. That's the whole point of free speech. But if you have a teleprompter situation, of course, you're going to be forcing people in the news to read something that is a corporate piece of propaganda. In my opinion, I would say that's what this lady said. See, that's the essence of fake news. It's always been the essence of the people we call the prostitutes, or more accurately, the Mockingbird media. The Mockingbird program of the CIA was intended to do that. That's what they are trying to get back to, a situation where you've only got ABC, CBS, NBC, and NPR. And interestingly enough, this criticism piece that I'm reading from right now is coming from, guess who? NPR. Who are the people that are complaining so much about this? Well, it's people like CNN and MSNBC. They say they are very concerned about Sinclair Broadcasting's propaganda. Let me read you their little set piece, play for you, rather. Let's do video clip number three.
Which we all disdain, depending on what our description is of them. The concern, I think,
there's a concern.
The concerns resurfaced.
Is that concerning to you?
Isn't that concerning, Nicole? I share Isn't that concern greatly. Mm. Mayor, should we be concerned?
Greatly concerned.
Should be a little bit concerning, particularly when it echoes.
It's not journalism, it's propaganda.
To run a propaganda clip.
This isn't journalism, this is propaganda.
Just shoving propaganda down local anchors' throats.
Scripted propaganda and accusations.
Propaganda has to
stop. So who's writing the script for Joe Scarborough? Who's writing that script for him? You know, we've seen this before. We've put together these clips on issue after issue. Remember a few years ago when everybody started saying gravitas about one individual or something? I don't even remember what it was about. It was just hilarious that all of a sudden you got this arcane word that nobody uses, gravitas, and it was being echoed like that. Just like these people are saying, concern, concern, propaganda, propaganda. That is how the mainstream media works. That is why you need to have multiple voices. And you need to have people who tell you what they think instead of reading off of a corporate prepared script. They just illustrated what is so wrong with the Mockingbird Press.
Waging war on corruption, it's David Knight.
All right, so we can take a look, as we did in the last segment, at the silly criticisms that are coming out against Sinclair Media, I think it is. I mean, they've got a lot of different local news channels, and they provide a scripted news for everybody. And we have seen this many, many times on many, many different issues. And what they were saying, actually, was, you know, hey, we're not fake news and so forth. How is that different than we report, you decide, or even CNN's CNN slogan, which is something very similar to that? It's not. It was basically an innocuous statement. It was not anything that even needed to be read. But they put it together and said, look at this. This is propaganda that's being put out here by this organization. We've done the same thing over and over again on different subjects. And then we showed them all using the same talking points about it being propaganda and so forth. So we have a poll. 77% of people believe that the traditional media is guilty of fake news. The legacy media, the prostitutes, the Mockingbird press. Because it was Operation Mockingbird that the CIA created to say, we're going to feed information to the New York Times, to the Washington Post, to the major networks. They're all going to report the same stories. They're all going to have exactly the same comments on those same stories. They're going to have the same angle. They all say the same thing. They will see no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil about the government or any programs that we want. Yeah, you, the people, will not hear any evil because they will not speak any evil of the government. They will only speak what the government tells them to do. That was CIA's Operation Mockingbird. They want to get back to that. That's why they have helped to create Facebook and Google. That's why they want Facebook, Google, Twitter, these social media oligarchy. They want them to have complete control over everything that you see and hear. And they will tell you what you can and cannot speak. If they don't like what you're saying, they're going to cut you off. They will silence you just like they have Julian Assange. And people realize that they're fake. They have to do this because they can't win the debate when they don't tell people the truth. when they don't fully disclose things, when they selectively try to control things, people realize they're being controlled. You know, even in communist authoritarian countries like the Soviet Union and in China, where they absolutely have had only one voice coming out, people understand it's a lie. They can smell that. They're not stupid. They know they're being lied to. The Russians never believed anything that was coming out of Pravda. They knew it was a Stalinist lie. And 77% of the people in America, 800 respondents, relayed their distrust. This is an article out of Breitbart. This is a Monmouth University polling thing. They said 77% of 800 respondents said that they distrusted major news organizations in both television and print, a marked increase from the 63% that was already skeptical a year ago. Well, I think it's good that people are skeptical. You should be skeptical of what I tell you. Look it up yourself. Test it. Test it against what other people say. Test it against your own research. You should always be skeptical of anything that you hear. 83% of those questioned believe that special interest groups intentionally seek to implant the mainstream news cycle with false information. 87% believe those same forces influence social media such as Facebook as well as YouTube. Yeah, absolutely. Look, of course, I'm not going to willingly lie to you. If I make a mistake, I will retract the mistake. I could still be wrong about something. So do your own research. And this is a wonderful thing about having freedom of speech. As I've said before, in the past, I used to not, when I was growing up, I didn't turn to mainstream television news or the big newspapers or the well-known general magazines like Newsweek and Time for information. I knew they weren't telling me the truth. I knew they were watering it down. I knew they were controlled from the government. I would look at opinion pieces. I would go to a conservative publication like National Review, or I'd go to a liberal one like The Nation or whatever, and I would make up my own mind. But the people I didn't care about was the mushy middle who were being controlled by the government, who pretended that they were completely objective, that they had no opinion, but I knew whose opinion they were pushing on me. I wanted to make up my own mind. You need to do the same thing. Stay with us. We'll be right back. More news.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. Just as I said at the top of the hour, we have a new poll that just came out from Monmouth University Polling Institute saying 77% of people believe that traditional media is fake news. And that's up from 63% last year. Now, it's interesting that it said 31% believe it to be a regular occurrence. 46% see it as a more occasional issue. Yeah, you know, I'll go to CNN because that's where the DNC holds its press conferences, right? If you want to know what the Democrat politicians want to say, they go on CNN to say it. Same thing is true of Fox News. If you want to know what the GOP politicians say, you'll go to Fox News because that's where the GOP holds its press conferences, is on Fox News. But once you start getting into the analysis of this, then you're starting to get into some shaky areas there. It said 83% question believe that special interest groups intentionally seek to implant the mainstream news cycle with false information. Yes, that would be groups like the DNC, the GOP, the deep state, the Koch brothers, so forth and so on. So, you know, consider the source, understand who is influencing this or whatever, but make up your own mind. You're an adult. What we need is more freedom, not less. And we need people to start being skeptical, to start thinking about what they're looking at. And then they said 87%. This is the highest consensus of anything. Almost 90% of the people understand that Facebook and YouTube are trying to influence you. Mm-hmm. Yes, you better believe they're trying to influence you. And so are the governments. A good example of this is in Brussels, in the EU. They're considering new powers to prevent social media companies from spreading fake news during election period. Is that really what they're looking at? Are they really trying to stop fake news? Do they have to protect you from this? Say, I don't need anybody protecting me from hate speech, from hog speech, from bullying, from harassing. I don't need that. Please don't protect me from any of that. I get it all the time. The only social media I use is Twitter. And if you want to send me some hate speech, you can go to Libertarian. Libertarian on Twitter. If you want to send me some hateful, you want to send something nice, you can do that as well. It doesn't bother me. You know, you have to have a thick skin as an adult, whether you are in the public sphere or not. There it is right there. There's a page. But bottom line is, it's just part of the way those platforms operate. YouTube, the comments can be really vicious. But, yeah, it's just the way people are. It's just part of being in the public sphere. That's what David Hogg needs to grow up and realize. One of the things he needs to grow up about, the other thing he needs to grow up about, is liberty and personal responsibility. Learn something about history. Learn something about other people's experiences. And on and on and on. There's so many things he needs to learn. But when we talk about what Brussels, the European Union, is doing, let's understand that they are not there to help you, to protect you from false information. You don't need to be protected from false information. The way you get protected from false information is to grow up and look at other sources of information. No, they want to control what you hear. They're trying to shut down not fake news, but free speech. Let's understand that's really what the agenda is here. They want to complain about the quote-unquote psychometric targeting activities of people like Cambridge Analytica. I am so sick and tired of hearing about Cambridge Analytica as if this was something new. As we reported over and over again, the Obama people were bragging about how they had done this to everybody, not to 50 million people, but to everybody in the United States. And folks, I've talked about this for over 5 years. What is being done by people who are far more effective and weaponized than Cambridge Analytica. People like Palantir. They were funded and developed and worked for organizations like CIA, DARPA. You ever hear those people? Do you know what geospatial intelligence is? Do you know what Palantir is? Did you hear PRISM when it was in the Ed Snowden leaks? Facebook is nothing compared to Palantir. Even compared to Google, Facebook is nothing. You look at Palantir, and you look at the way this stuff can be weaponized by our government, and the way that they can control information and not even tell you about it. All the stuff about fake news is simply to put a beard on what they have been doing and what they're going to do far more, and that is to control information during an election. Why is it that President Trump didn't have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to get elected? You know, they would never look at a candidate and take them seriously unless they had a lot of money. The metric for giving anybody anything other than ridicule by the mainstream media was, well, how much money do you have to spend? What's your budget? What's your campaign budget? Who are your contributors? You have $1 million, $10 million, $100 million, $1 billion? Oh, now you're talking about somebody who's serious. And it wasn't just because they were going to be spending that money buying ads on their media outlet. That was one thing that they would want. Yeah, oh yeah, we'll give you some attention. You got money to spend? Okay, good. We'll make a big deal out of your candidacy, and you can spend some of that cash with us. But it was also a recognition of the reality that it wasn't just going to be the free media that they were going to give. You're going to buy your way in one way or the other. And that's what has corrupted our system. And I think that it was very instructive that even though President Trump was independently wealthy, and he needed to be independently wealthy to even be able to fly around and have the campaign events where he had tens of thousands of people show up, 20, 30,000 people. That's unprecedented in a campaign. That's a bigger deal than what Obama did, because Obama would go into these places and he would have big headliner bands that would come in and play as a warm-up for him. He didn't stand there and talk about policy for 2 hours like President Trump did off the cuff. Obama had a big entertainment factor. All these celebrities and bands would come in and create an event. So people would show up for the spectacle as much as anything else. No, this is hardcore politics that Trump was talking about. And just doing it in an unscripted way. And doing it for hours. And people would hang around and listen. That's never happened before. Not in modern society. I mean, it used to be the entertainment thing. You know, back in the day where they had the Lincoln-Douglas debates. They would bring a debate into town. Everybody would show up because, you know, they didn't have any entertainment. They didn't have radio. They didn't have television. They didn't have movies. I mean, that was, you know, circus coming to town, you know, clowns and whatever. And you know, these are kind of like the clowns coming to town. They would have a debate. That was high entertainment to hear these guys speak. But that's not the case now. It was very unusual what President Trump did. But he also used, as we all see with Twitter and so forth, he used social media effectively. They don't want that to happen. They are so deathly afraid that somebody who isn't even a billionaire could subvert their control grid of you got to buy your way in. And if you have to buy your way in, that means you have to become the slave of the contributors in advance. H.L. Mencken told us that an election is an advanced auction of stolen goods. And that's the way they want to keep it. That's why they want to shut down any political discourse on social media and call it fake news. Oh, we're controlling fake news. No, you're trying to control our speech. You're trying to control the information that gets out to the people. It was exposed in India. The Indian government, reports RT, withdraws its move to crack down on journalists over fake news. Everybody saw it there for what it was. We don't see it for what it is here in the United States. Indian Prime Minister Modi has ordered the withdrawal of a move to crack down on journalists responsible for distributing quote-unquote fake news. The Information and Broadcasting Ministry had said that the government has said now that the government will withdraw the accreditation of journalists who peddle fake news. But opposition parties and journalists describe the rule as an effort by the government to control the press ahead of a general election due by next year. They saw it exactly for what it was. And the opposition parties and the press got together and said, you're not going to do that. Now, when President Trump comes out and says to CNN, you're fake news, this is garbage, he's entitled to do that. Let them come back and say why that they're not fake news. Let them argue with him. Instead, they go off like David Hogg. He's bullying us. He's harassing us. He's trying to shut down free speech. No, he's not. He's engaging in free speech. He's engaging in free speech. You engage back in free speech. But instead, they do things like this. This is why he calls them fake news. CNN mocked for glorifying JFK's legendary, quote unquote, that's the way we refer to it on CNN. JFK has legendary infidelity. But Trump has sex allegations. I mean, no matter what the Kennedys did, they got away with it. All the way up to the point that Ted Kennedy left the woman to die in the car in a watery grave at Chappaquiddick. That's when they apparently pulled back a little bit. Besides, President Trump said Stormy Weathers isn't his type. He doesn't go for women with huge pupils. All right, we'll be right back. I'm David Knight. What's going on with Facebook? How this may go down? Are they going to go away? There's been a big crash in their stock that has affected the stock market quite a bit. We're going to take a look at that in a moment when we get to economic news. But I want to take a look at some of the stuff that's being proposed. Then I want to take a look at this Sheikh. You know, MBS, the guy from Saudi Arabia. He just bought out the entire Four Seasons in L.A. at Beverly Hills. And this is a place where they have several suites that each of these go for more than $10,000 a night. There isn't any room in that hotel that is less than $625. They got 285 units and so forth, right? 100 of these are luxury units. He bought the entire hotel. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And what's even more amazing is some of the stuff that he had to say. He doesn't know what Wahhabism is. The Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia claims to be ignorant. Wahhabism, what is this thing you speak of? Can you define this for me? Yeah, we can. It's like religious police beating women who aren't sufficiently covered, telling them they can't drive cars. And I know you announced that you're going to let them get out of the bumper cars on Friday nights that they're allowed to drive. And they're going to be allowed to drive now, anytime now, real soon now. They're going to be allowed. It still hasn't happened, but we got this promise that they're going to be entering the 20th century, not the 21st century, but the 20th century. And, of course, the liberals don't have anything at all to say about this. You can look at what they're doing there, but it's always the, oh, but the Handmaid's Tale. Oh, what a poignant story of male domination. Take a look at Saudi Arabia. You don't need to make something up like the Handmaid's Tale unless you want to attack Christianity. Then you do. Then you do. If you want to promote abortion, then you make up something like the Handmaid's Tale. If you want to talk about people being attacked because they're women, just report on the truth of what's going on in Saudi Arabia. But he claims, oh, no, I'm not a Wahhabist, absolutely not a Wahhabist. Islam is a religion of peace. We'll get into that in just a moment, as well as the EPA Cafe, the corporate average fuel economy. I'm not talking about where Scott Pruitt has coffee. Mark Zuckerberg has proposed a Facebook Supreme Court to rule on hate speech. The last thing in the world I want is another Supreme Court. We need to get rid of the one we've got. As I said before, the illustration that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks is former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, appointed by a Republican, a Rockefeller Republican, Jerry Ford, opining about how necessary it is to get rid of the Second Amendment, how it doesn't mean what you think it means, and all these lies that he spent his entire life trying to subvert the Constitution, that he lied when he took an oath to it, to uphold it, to defend it. He should be a referee. Instead, he is a social engineer, and he's still doing that even after he left the bench. He has an argument for why we need to have term limits. His whole life is an argument for that. I mean, he came in as kind of a conservative slash moderate. That lasted just a couple of years. Within 8 years, he was left. And then by 2003, he got appointed in 1970. By 2003, they found that he was the hardest left person on the bench. They only get worse with power. We need to have term limits on these judges, number one. Number two, when they determine that they are going to be writing the law of the land, the supreme law of the land, as we're told over and over again, Roe v. Wade is the supreme law of the land. No, it isn't. It is an opinion by the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has reversed its opinions multiple times. As I said before, they originally, in the early part of the 20th century, some of the first movies came out. They said there is no First Amendment for movies. How about that, Hollywood left? You ever hear that? There is no First Amendment for film, they said, the Supreme Court said. And they attacked a guy, massive fine and imprisonment for putting out a movie about the American Revolution, The Spirit of 76. It was politically motivated. I said, no, you don't have political speech on film. Boy, what would Hollywood say today? And that Supreme Court decision stood until the 1950s. It stood for about 40 years till they reversed it. Supreme Court can be wrong, has been wrong in many things. The Dred Scott decision, for example. The Supreme Court, in terms of the Veil of Tears, where Andrew Jackson threw the Cherokee out of the mountains of mountainous areas of North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, forced them to go to Oklahoma. That was wrong. The Supreme Court originally said, yeah, you can do that. And then that same Supreme Court, within about a year, reversed itself. And then you had Andrew Jackson, who, even though what he was doing was reprehensible, he was right about his constitutional power and authority to do it. He said, let's see the Supreme Court. They've made their decision. Let's see them enforce it. That's what President Trump needs to do at our border. He has the authority to do that. It is not. There he is right there. President Trump has pictures of Andrew Jackson. He likes Andrew Jackson, and he needs to start acting like Andrew Jackson and recognize that would be one of the greatest services that President Trump could do to our country, is to stand beside the decision that it wasn't just Andrew Jackson. He wasn't alone. Everybody understood that. Andrew Hamilton said the judiciary is the least dangerous branch of government because they don't have any power to enforce anything. That was Alexander Hamilton, the guy that the left loves and sings about, said that. Anyway, Mark Zuckerberg wants a new Supreme Court. This one being run by Facebook. Maybe there are other Supreme Courts being run by Facebook, too. He wants them to rule on hate speech. And let me tell you how this is going. We have a Consumer Financial Protection Board, this new bureaucracy that was created along with the Dodd-Frank bill. Barney Frank, Chuck Dodd, before they left, they wrote this bill. They created this agency that Elizabeth Warren wanted to help create as well. We're going to protect consumers. Right? Going to protect, just like Mark Zuckerberg is going to protect you from fake news and from hate speech. Well, what happened when they protected us in the wake of what the Federal Reserve and the banks that were too big to fail, too big to jail did? Yeah, they suckered us all right. Their fake economic bubbles and their fake economic loans and their collateralized loans and all this other kind of stuff. Yeah, that was totally fake. And when all that stuff blew up, they said, we're going to control the big banks. We're not going to let that happen again. And we're going to protect the consumers. Hey, that's great. I love that idea. Except that's not what it was for. The purpose of the Dodd-Frank bill, the purpose of this new bureaucracy, the CPFB, that has become this arrogant bureaucracy. Remember when the guy stepped down and Trump said, well, I'm going to appoint somebody else. And the number two that was there, the deputy at the CPFB, said, no, you're not. I'm the number two. I'm going to appoint myself. not you, President Trump. I mean, that's the arrogance of this newly minted financial control board. What they did was they created all kinds of rules and regulations that made it impossible for small and medium-sized banks to compete. They couldn't handle the regulation. And so they had to withdraw from a lot of different areas where loans are being made. And they were failing at a massive rate. Remember, for years, several years, it doesn't happen anymore because they're all gone. But Matt Drudge would catalog it. He'd say, well, look, 150 banks this year, 175 banks this year, and so forth. Every year, you would see them failing by the hundreds until they're gone. And now you just basically have the banks that are too big to fail. And so Mark Zuckerberg wants to propose a Facebook Supreme Court. He wants regulations coming from the government so that he can make sure there is no competition coming up to him. He wants to make sure there isn't a Gab or somebody else that's going to come along. They're going to regulate social media in general, not come in as they should and say that Facebook and Google are de facto monopolies, more so than the baker and the photographer that they want to control who don't want to bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. No, these people really are a monopoly and they should be treated as such. It is an open marketplace.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Just a couple more things to say about Facebook there. So we have Zuckerberg proposing a Facebook Supreme Court to rule on quote-unquote hate speech. As I pointed out, he would love to see social media in general regulated. They could comply with those regulations and use that as an obstacle to keep new competing organizations from coming into existence to drive out smaller organisms. And then, as we see with the Dodd-Frank bill, the CPFB, the new bureaucracy that was created to administer that and so forth, then they will come back after the competition is gone and say, hey, we don't need those rules anymore. We're all responsible adults here. You can take that away. That's the way, look, folks, it isn't just the big banks. I could give you example after example after example. That's the way that government is used by businesses at every level, not just the federal level, at the state level, at the local level, and so forth. These people buy influence with the local government or the state government or the federal government, and they use it to saw off the lower rungs of the ladder of opportunity for other people. And then once they have a monopoly, it's like, oh, yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, you all come in. Oh, you can't afford to compete, can you? And so he's out there with an interview with Vox.com, at one point suggesting a Supreme Court model could be used for judging what counts as hate speech on the platform. No, just let us have a free speech. Just recognize the fact that they have a de facto monopoly, that this is a public market, and explicitly say that Facebook and Google and Twitter are not going to be allowed to censor people on a public market. Just do it that way. Just do that. Just say you're not going to be allowed to censor people. End of story. That's all you need to do. You are not going to become the gatekeepers for information. They don't need anything other than that. And so, but that's not what they're doing. As we pointed out multiple times, and as Breitbart points out yet again, Zuckerberg has explained how they will kill alternative media. Outlets like InfoWars that you're listening to now. They want to make sure that you, the reader, if you see something that you like, you're not going to be able to pass it on. And then they're not going to let us put our stuff on their site because they're only going to allow trusted news sources. We're back to the legacy media, the Mockingbird media, the people that tell you no evil about the government so that you will see no evil about the government. You will hear no evil about the government. Broadly trusted news sources, they say, only via a mechanism designed to favor established outlets and to crush new media. Facebook introduced its new system back in January. We've been talking about it since before it was released. We told you about this before it was released. We told you this is the tactic they were going to use. We've been talking about it since they did it in January. The results in January, as soon as they made it go live, the results were immediately apparent. Facebook traffic to establishment outlets like CNN and NBC soared upwards, while traffic to conservative outlets fell. Facebook engagements, and that means things like likes, shares, comments, also fell across multiple new media outlets, including those on the right and the left. Facebook engagement on even President Trump's posts fell by 45%. And folks, it's not just the establishment media on the left. Rupert Murdoch has openly talked about he's willing to pay to make sure that you don't hear some new media out there, to make sure that he is the only voice on the right. And if you think he's a conservative, another thing coming. This guy is an opportunist is what he is. New York Times said, well, they tried to boycott Facebook, Apple, and Google, but they failed. And they pointed out the irony of this one guy saying, dear Apple, your silence is deafening. #BoycottApple. And he got more than 330 accounts retweeting his message. But how did he post the message? Well, he used an iPhone. He put it on social media that is tightly controlled. All right, let's talk about the Sheik, who has rented all the rooms at the Four Seasons Hotel in L.A., Beverly Hills. As they point out, this is a very exclusive hotel. As Hollywood Reporter says, it is a home away from home for Hollywood insiders. But it's going to be fully booked for 3 days. Sources confirmed to the Hollywood Reporter that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and we will refer to him furthermore as his nickname, many people, MBS, and his entourage have reserved the entire hotel for their L.A. excursion, a visit that marks his first trip to the city. The hotel rooms at the 16-story hotel, all of which he has bought, start at $625 a night. They have 285 units. 185 of those are guest rooms, 100 are luxury suites, and a presidential suite alone, and they have several of those, go for $10,000 a night. No problem, because these are people that we have put in these are people in Saudi Arabia that we have put in power, that we have put in control early of our currency with a petrodollar. These are people who didn't know how to find oil. They didn't know how to extract it. They didn't know how to refine it. They didn't know what it was used for. They hadn't invented any machines that it was to be used for. But we put them in a position of extraordinary wealth, and it has corrupted them. And I'll give you some examples of this. Well, one of the things, and we're going to be talking about his pronouncements on Wahhabism. He doesn't know what the Wahhabists are doing. He didn't have anything to do with that. Okay, well, Saudi Arabia is the center of that branch of Islam. He pretends he doesn't even know what it is in an interview. They've just announced, and they're entering the modern world, folks. They have confirmed that they will be lifting their 35-year ban on public cinemas. Oh, that's great. What does that tell you about Sharia law? Wahhabism. What is that, Wahhabism? Oh, we don't know. He has admitted, while he's here, that yes, Saudis did finance terrorist groups. We don't want to talk about that. We don't want to talk about that. He admitted, though, in a wide-ranging interview in The Atlantic, that Saudi nationals have funded terrorist groups, and quite stunningly, that Israelis are entitled to live peacefully on their own land. This is reported by Zero Hedge. Why would he be saying that about the Israelis? Well, because Israel and MBS have a common enemy in Iran, and you'll see this in his statements about Iran. So he's willing to make allies of Israel as you'll see him do. His comments come just a few days after a U.S. judge rejected Saudi Arabia's request to dismiss lawsuits about 9/11. The families say that the majority of hijackers are Saudi citizens. They claim Saudi officials and institutions aided and abetted the attackers, and the judge agreed with that. And so now does the Crown Prince, MBS. And then he went on to say, I believe Palestinians and Israelis have the right to have their own land. Well, maybe he could help the Palestinians to live in his desert. Oh, no, wait, he's not going to do that. He's not going to open up his borders any more than the Pope is going to open up the Vatican to people or to sell some of his art treasures to help people. No, he will lecture us just like the Saudis will lecture people about the Palestinian problem. He won't do a thing to solve it. Won't do a thing to solve it because it's going to create unrest. When you bring in massive numbers of people into the Vatican or into Mecca or whatever, it's going to create unrest in that country. And that's precisely why people are doing it to our country and to Europe. They want to create unrest. We know that. We know what they're doing. The Saudi Crown Prince also says, this is a story from Breitbart, that he's not familiar with Wahhabism. He says Islam is a religion of peace. But then he also came after Iran. He said, I believe the Iranian supreme leader makes Hitler look good. Hitler didn't do what the supreme leader is trying to do. Hitler tried to conquer Europe. The supreme leader is trying to conquer the world. Well, I think actually Hitler tried to conquer the world as well. But anyway, he goes on, it says, another interesting part of the interview concerned MBS's ongoing efforts, the Crown Prince's ongoing efforts to frame Saudi Arabia as, I love the way Breitbart puts this, a jovial land of moderate Islam, temporarily caught up in the Islamist extremism of the late 1970s. Well, you might have noticed that they were beheading more people than ISIS in the last several years. Yeah. They got religious police that beat women because they're not appropriately attired. They still, in spite of their pronouncements in Washington and elsewhere, they have still not allowed women to even drive cars. But anyway, he described his vision of a reformist kingdom, returning to the progressive roots. Progressive roots? What progressive roots? And doing battle against the triangle of evil. It would be Iran, the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Sunni terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. He says Islam is a religion of peace. For 1,400 years, Muslims have been trying to spread the word of God. Yeah, a religion of peace. That's right. When Goldberg pointed out that the Wahhabi fundamentalist ideology of Saudi Arabia long predates the dire events of 1979, the Ayatollah Khomeini, he said, I know not what you speak of. What is this Wahhabism? Yeah, we'll have more about that, and we'll define it for you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to tell you what Wahhabism is. The Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, claimed in an interview with Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic he had no idea what this thing called Wahhabism is. I don't know what this is. He was asked by Goldberg, who was at The Atlantic, who was interviewing him. He pointed out that the Wahhabi fundamentalist ideology of Saudi Arabia long predates the dire events of 1979, the Ayatollah Khomeini's revolution in Iran, and the siege of the Grand Mosque in Mecca. And, of course, this is what the Crown Prince is talking about. He goes, yeah, Iran, they must go. They are the greatest evil in the world right now is Iran, and we're going to make common cause even with Israel to get rid of Iran, says Saudi Arabia. And he says, yeah, but, you know, this Wahhabi fundamentalist ideology that runs Saudi Arabia predates that by a long bit. And his response was to say, this Wahhabism, please define it for us. We are not familiar with it. We do not know about it. Yeah. Islam is a religion of peace, and they will always tell you the truth about this stuff. I'm going to tell you the truth about Wahhabism right after this quick commercial break, because we haven't done one this hour, and that's what funds this program. The products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com, we really do appreciate your support. And we have a lot of very fine products, many of them on deep discount right now. We've got 50% off CellForce. We have 50% off a combo pack of BrainForce, my favorite supplement, as well, combined with the Real Red Pill. And you will also find our air filter, our very quiet, very effective, very attractive Alexa Pure Breeze, $50 off right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And we also have a new product, our Nano Silver Super Blue Gargle. Our Super Blue products, like our toothpaste, our mouthwash that we've already had, they don't have fluoride. They do have the good halogen, iodine, and they have Nano Silver. Nano Silver, very effective at fighting bacteria as well as viruses. You know, we have antibiotics. They don't work on viruses, but silver can be very effective against viruses. And we have a new product, Super Blue Gargle. And so you can use that orally, or you can even use it on your hands to clean things up. Silver is very effective, folks. It is an ancient remedy, and it is something that is still used in the modern world. Hospitals use silver as part of a salve. At least one of the uses that they use it for is a salve that they put on people who have been burned severely to keep them from getting infected. It is very effective. It doesn't burn like alcohol does, but it is just like alcohol in that. So you can get that right now, that new product, Super Blue Gargle, 33% off. Give it a try. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Wahhabism. Let's talk a little bit about the promotion of jihad and martyrdom, because this is being done, funded by the UK. They are promoting this same type of jihad and martyrdom that is all part of Wahhabism. That is, Wahhabism is regarded by most people, you know, you got these different sects. The biggest three are Sunni, Shia, and Wahhabism. And that is regarded by most people as being the most intolerant, the most violent. We see that in Saudi Arabia, where they're cutting people's hands off, this barbaric Sharia law, cutting people's hands off, cutting if you're guilty of theft or whatever, stoning people, cutting heads off, and so forth. More beheadings, as I said before, than ISIS at the height of the Syrian wars. But it continues on. And, of course, we do not know what this Wahhabism is with their religious police and so forth. Yeah, you can have a Bible there now. They've loosened things up a little bit, but you better keep it in private. You know, don't walk around with it. You might get whacked by their religious police. But what's happening with the Palestinians and the UK taxpayer? Well, the UK taxpayer is funding 33,000 teachers in Palestine. And what are they teaching? Well, they have a curriculum that's been put together by the West Bank government there that is promoting martyrdom and jihad against Israel. Study materials from the schools in Palestine push children toward violence, said a review by the Institute for Monitoring Peace and Cultural Tolerance in School Education. It's an acronym called IMPACT. They said the school program not only demonized Israel, but also, quote, provided a rationale for war. For example, they have a science textbook. It teaches Newtonian gravity through the image of a boy with a slingshot targeting soldiers. And they use that to explain power, mass, and tensile strength. Uh-huh. Yeah, you use trigonometry for your slingshot or whatever. An 11th grade physics textbook teaches circular motion through the use of a slingshot in another clash with IDF soldiers. This is systemic, endemic hatred. This is, and quite frankly, this is something that we have being done in many different ways with our own curricula here in America. Whether it's the transgender agenda that's being foisted on our kids in kindergarten, trying to confuse them about their gender, or whether it's the white privilege curriculum of Bill Ayers or others, that you have to understand what your kids are being taught. If you don't know what your kids are being taught, then shame on you. Shame on you. You're going to wake up someday and you're going to be totally alienated from your children. You're going to wake up, find that you're in a world that you don't recognize with kids who absolutely hate you because they've been raised by the state, propagandized by the state. But what are they doing with this? When they talk about martyrs, and again, the new movie that just came out, I talked about James Caviezel yesterday. Paul, I think the subtitle is Apostle of Christ or something like that, but it's basically Paul awaiting execution, Luke visiting him in prison, talking, you know, flashbacks of what's going on, religious persecution and so forth. And the understanding, where did this word martyr come from? Like in so many different ways, Islam is a perversion. It's a perverted cult of death. And you can see this nowhere better than in the terminology of martyrdom. Martyr was Greek for witness. You had people, the early Christians, who had witnessed Christ, and they would die rather than recant what they had seen, rather than deny Christ. They would die. And so the Greek word, martyr, came about. Witnesses, people who had witnessed Christ and would die rather than turn their back on it. Not kill. No, that was the perverted religion of peace, this cult of death. They took that word of people who would die rather than deny. And they turned it into an imperative to kill for their religion. Big difference, isn't it? To die for what you have seen and experienced and what you believe, than to kill people who don't agree with you. Ah, that's the difference between Christian martyrdom and Islamic martyrdom. And they say another textbook encourages 9-year-olds to be martyrs with a picture of students looking at their friend's empty death with the sign, "The Martyr." Empty desk, I should say. Yeah, it is an empty death. Calls for violent resistance against Israel. I vow I shall sacrifice my blood to saturate the land of the generous and will remove the usurper from my country and will exterminate the remnants of the foreigners. Sacrifice of life is also widely encouraged, reports a story from RT. And dying is presented as better than living. Quote, drinking the cup of bitterness with glory is much sweeter than a pleasant long life accompanied by humiliation. They say martyrdom and jihad are the most important meanings of life. That's 1 5th grade Arabic language paper. Yeah, that's the difference between Islamic martyrdom and American, or should say Christian martyrdom. Yeah, it's no longer American, isn't it? Christianity, America is not Christian anymore. Was founded on Christian principles, no longer. UK taxpayers for that kind of textbook that I just read you excerpts from. Breitbart reports that UK taxpayers are paying £20 million to spread that kind of hatred. In just 1 year, UK taxpayers paid that. They promoted jihad. They promoted anti-Semitism. They promoted radical Islam and the Islamization of Europe. Yeah, the UK is gone, folks. And even when I went there with my wife in the early 1980s, I mean, they still had the hardcore generation that had fought off Hitler. What a wonderful generation that was. And there were still many of them there when we went there in the early 1980s. But when we went back in the early 2000s with my sons, didn't recognize the place. Didn't recognize it at all. We'd spent quite a good deal of time there. We spent 6 weeks there in 1980, and we went back again for another couple of weeks in 1984. We really knew London very well. And we went back with my kids. I had to apologize for taking them there because it had turned into a city of foreigners. The native Londoners had gone. The World War II generation had died off. And it was filled with mostly foreigners and angry Englishmen who would smack you upside the head if you brushed against them. I mean, I'm sorry to care if you're listening in London. Okay. I know I'm doing it, but that was our experience. Okay. London in 1980 was kind of like Hong Kong when we went in the mid-2000s. A wonderful place Hong Kong was. But they're paying 33,000 teachers' salaries. And this was admitted by the Foreign Aid Minister, Alistair Burt, in a series of parliamentary questions. And now the UK has turned into that. When we were there in the 1980s, it was just these wealthy Saudi sheiks who controlled certain parts of London. Now they control everything there. All right, that's it for our broadcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm David Knight.